You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 30 October. We had the Bank of Japan rate decision an hour ago. No change. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kieran Whitten from Anchor. The FOMC, we had the rate decision last night. And NVIDIA, the world's first $5 trillion company. Is it still worth holding? And then we're going to be chatting with Prescient Investment Management, how a handful of stocks are dominating on the JSE. And then Belinda Sullivan from Alex Forbes on how we stacked up in the Mercer CFA Institute Global Pension Index. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb: China confronts contradictions. Its policies can seem unpredictable, but labeling it uninvestable is misleading. Bloomberg: Trump says there could be a trade deal as meeting with Xi Jinping kicks off. Morning markets, the year was mixed, but the S&P, it was down a third of a point, so we can call that flat. NASDAQ up 0.4%. The East is green. We've got Sydney up a tenth of a percent. We've got Tokyo up 0.2%. Hong Kong, 0.5%. And Tencent, 2.8% higher. Commodities, mostly green. Gold futures, the exception, 3,947. Brent is 64.63. Platinum, 1,584. Palladium, 1,422. The Rand, 17.19. Bitcoin, 110,700. And top 40 opening call, a couple of hours ago, was looking green, but it is now red, 200 points or 0.2% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Kieran, always appreciate the early morning. Let's start with the FOMC last night. We got the 0.25% rate cut that was widely expected by markets. And then, of course, the interesting part is the Jerome Powell press conference half an hour later. And what I took from it, and I quote him, investors need to rein in expectations for a December interest rate cut. He's kind of saying, and in fact, he used those words as well, where he says we're sort of at the neutral rate after a percent and a half of rate cuts. Is he really going to pause? I mean, I imagine there's a lot of tension in that FOMC about whether we get more cuts or not. We know what President Trump wants.
Good morning, Simon. Good to be on the show again. And from last night, I simply had written, after I saw what the announcement was, as you said, largely as expected.
Yeah.
But then the press conference, I suddenly had to rethink that, because expectations had been baked in that there would be further rate cuts in December, and he did rein those in, as you have said. So, my view, Simon, is I think that is the right call. Obviously, it's a very complex decision, a lot of moving parts. But ultimately, the Fed's mandate is to strike a balance between full employment and price stability, otherwise known as stable inflation. And I think the focus from the Fed since Jackson Hole has been on the weakening labor market. There was a bit of a sea change in perception at Jackson Hole as to how healthy the labor market was. And I think it's fair to say that this narrative remains in place. There are concerns about the downside risk to the labor market. It's not like it's spinning away from us, sort of in a downward spiral, but the Fed does remain concerned that the risks are to the downside. And then on to inflation, I think this is possibly why they are hesitant to cut rates further, because it is not yet at that 2% target.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been there for this whole year. And I do think that, you know, a lot of people have been surprised by the lack of inflation that has fed through to the economy after the tariffs. I do think that the inflation outlook has been rather fortunate in the U.S. because housing prices have actually been on a downward trend, the price increases for most of this year, which has put downward pressure on that overall inflation reading. But still, nonetheless, tariff inflation hasn't really come through yet. But I think, Simon, what we've seen in the financial media is a lot of people talking about the risks to obviously inflating this bubble, if there is one, by cutting rates. going into a bull market or a period where there has been a bull market and an economy that is strong. So personally, I was quite relieved to see Jerome Powell step back these expectations for further rate cuts. I just think you don't want to add more fuel to the fire, and the systemic risk does creep in when asset price bubbles do inflate to a level where we don't want them to get to.
Now, I don't take your point. Excuse me. 3%. I mean, that is the key thing, and they want a 2% inflation. I mean, that is the point. Let's quickly touch NVIDIA, the world's first $5 trillion company. I can't wrap my head around the size of that. And I suppose my question is, I look at it on a PE of little under 60. Truthfully, sales growth expected to be a little under 60. I mean, is this stock expensive? Should we all be scared? Or is this just an amazing company that is shooting the lights out?
Simon, so I think it's obviously a very divisive stock, but mm-hmm. our general consensus at Anchor amongst many of the offshore or the people looking at the offshore space is that the valuation is actually still okay. Mm-hmm. And we do think that there's still quite a bit of upside to NVIDIA. I think the key thing to watch out is obviously if the cloud providers, the big hyperscalers, once they start to pull back on CapEx spending, then maybe we would relook at the NVIDIA investment case. But of all the money that is flowing into the artificial intelligence investments, NVIDIA is sitting right at the top as the engine room for this global AI boom. And that is not going to change. I mean, it still is the main beneficiary from this. And I do think, obviously, there's a lot of chat about the energy availability being more constrained in the US. And this could cause AI infrastructure spending on things like data centers to be pulled back. But we do think that the replacement cycle for chips is still going to remain quite high, and it's going to shorten because these big data centers are going to keep on needing more efficient chips, even if they are not building new data centers. And that is where NVIDIA comes in. I mean, there are risks to the investment case, obviously.
Sure.
But I do think that there is still much more juice left to squeeze here. And NVIDIA still looks very strong at a valuation that, truth be told, is not actually too undemanding yet.
Yeah, and I like your point around the replacement cycle. That's a good point because NVIDIA, every year they bring out new chips and they're always faster, but they also use less power every time. And that perhaps is also a big part that is often missed. We'll leave it there. That's Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Always appreciate the early morning. A poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter is around Jerome Powell. All right, cuts over in the US for now. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Nicholas Leclerc, quantitative analyst at Prescient Investment Management. Nicholas, appreciate the early morning. Basic materials, handful of large cap tech counters, NASPAS process, really are dominating the JSE. We look at a plus 30% return on our market so far year to date, but it really is just a couple of stocks that are pushing that return higher as the rest lag. And in some cases, thinking SA Retail, they're actually underwater this year.
Hi, Simon, and thanks for having me. Like you say, it's been a great year for South African equity investors with the All-Share Index up about 36% year to date. And like you said, the majority of that has been driven by the basic materials sector and NASPAS and Prosus. So the basic materials sector up about 110% for the year. Mm-hmm. Prosus about 45% and 56% respectively. Those are not insignificant gains. If you strip those two out of the All-Share Index, the rest of the index has contributed about only 7% year to date. It's not an unknown theme amongst investors that those two indices are dominating the All-Share Index. But definitely this year we've seen it really, really come into effect. And even the concentration of those two sectors in the All-Share Index has increased this year, which has signaled a bit of an increase in concentration risk.
Absolutely. It also means as an investor, if you missed a few stocks, you're not getting that plus 30. You're all the way down in single digit. And what we have seen, I mean, a key feature of this year has been that geopolitical uncertainty. Global sentiment is changing. That after President Trump came in way back in January. And this has seen, it's been a golden platinum. And again, done spectacularly well. And if you've missed them, your portfolio is not looking as pretty as an index, as what? Gold just under 4,000, PGMs both running this year.
Yeah, for sure. So gold this year has seen a great price increase. The majority of that, as you say, is coming from an increase in geopolitical uncertainty. And if you couple that with some uncertainty around the U.S. economy, we saw central banks and investors starting to pile into gold as a basement as a safe haven asset, instead of when in the past they would have potentially have gone to U.S. treasuries to do so.
And that perhaps is the big significant shift. As you said, it would have been treasuries in the past. Now it's gold, which has not been the case for much of the last, I was going to say decade, truthfully two and a half decades. It is, I mean, it's around navigating these market cycles, and it's a volatile global environment. I mean, you know, we've got markets left, right and center at all-time highs. As investors, I like all-time highs because it means I'm richer, but it does bring, it is a volatile and a skittish environment out there in global equities. We've got President Trump and Xi Jinping meeting today. That could go either way and add to the volatility.
Yeah, for sure. And when markets run, of course, the valuations of them start to stretch out a bit. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that in the South African case as well. In the beginning of the year, it was actually these price multiples were actually trading below their long-term averages. And with this significant rally, it's actually gone above their long-term averages. And at the moment, of course, you can justify those ratios if you have good earnings potentials. Mm-hmm. But we are actually, as a house, not quite seeing that at the moment. And as a result, we've looked to de-risk some of our portfolios, especially in the equity markets, not just the South African one. I would say US and Europe as well. We've looked to slightly decrease exposure to those assets.
Decreasing risk, I get that. It makes perfect sense. But where do you move to in the degree with your decrease? I mean, are you sitting more cash, or are you picking up treasuries, bonds? Where are you moving to?
Yeah, so we'll look to like you said, more cash markets, both local and mm-hmm. offshore. We can also look to diversify some of this risk. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, the All Share Index in South Africa only has about 125 shares in it.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's looking quite concentrated at the moment with the run of the basic materials sector, Naspers and Prosus. If you add those two together, it makes up about 45% of that index, which is not insignificant. And if we look to compare that to, say, an emerging market index, that's over 1,000 shares in it. So for us, that's looking a lot more well-diversified mm-hmm. South African index at the moment. So that's definitely an area where investors can look to diversify this risk.
We leave it there. It's Nicholas de Klerk, quantitative analyst, Prescient Investment Management. Appreciate the early morning. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Belinda Sullivan, head of corporate consulting strategy at Alex Forbes. Belinda, appreciate the time. The 2025 Mercer CFA Institute Global Pension Index has just come out. Before we delve into how we did as a country, what is the index? What is it looking to measure?
So good morning, Simon. Basically, the index is the world's leading independent benchmark for comparing different retirement income systems. Mm-hmm. It covers 52 countries, which representing 65% of the world's population. So you can imagine that it's got a good record in terms of the amount of statistics that it can pull through.
Absolutely. And I'm a number nerd. I love statistics. How did South Africa do? How did we stack up, and perhaps more importantly, stack up compared to previous years?
So we have improved from last year. Last year we were graded a E, and this year essentially we've shifted up to a C grading. And that means that the system has some good features, but also major risks and shortcomings that could be addressed. So without these improvements, its efficacy and long-term sustainability could potentially be questioned. In terms of the assessment, they do look at different sub-indices, and that is where we're looking at adequacy. So just in terms of, are retirees receiving enough income for a dignified retirement? They look at sustainability. So can the system deliver the benefits over the long term? And then integrity, is the system well-governed, transparent, and trusted? So that's essentially what they use in order to benchmark the different regimes. And we see that the South African improvement in particular is a result of an improvement in the adequacy score. So that's what shifted us from a D to the introduction of the two-pot system.
I was going to say, is that two-pot? Because as much as, you know, there people are saying, oh, we're withdrawing money from the two-pot. And to be clear, some people are. But as a concept, it's actually probably a much better system, because in the past we'd have people, I don't know, retiring and taking the money. This way you can get money out, but you're kind of limited and restricted. So it is a step forward for the for the system, and this index recognizes that.
Definitely. And I mean, if we consider two-pot, we're now looking at the two-thirds of contribution that is now compulsory preservation for the long term. So people can only get that out as an income in retirement as opposed to taking it out in cash. And now on resignation, people are then limited in terms of the amount of money they can access in cash as well. So that helps prevent further leakage from the system. So overall, it does then improve retirement outcomes for those individuals who are fortunate enough to be part of the occupational retirement system.
And the area which we did come out very strongly was integrity, which is hugely important. And I mean, I wouldn't for a second have thought anything otherwise. It's nice to have an international index essentially look at our retirement industry and say, yeah, there's good integrity here. It's what we need. It's what we want. It's what retirees deserve. And frankly, we are getting it.
100%. And I mean, if we look at the integrity index that we scored, we essentially got a B+. And that puts us in the same sort of region as like an Austria, Denmark, France, Germany, those types of countries. So we know from our retirement industry that there is a lot of regulatory intervention, a lot of legislation that supports the integrity of the system. The conversation around that scoring and demonstrating the strength that we have in the country.
Does the index sort of help us sort of looking forward with sort of ideas of where we could perhaps add some more reform? I mean, we've got the two-pot that came in September last year, but other areas that perhaps we could work on to sort of up our score, get to B and ultimately to A?
Definitely. So I think there's a lot in terms of looking at the index itself, because the index does look at, I mean, we're comparing public retirement systems with private retirement systems. So in South Africa, we do have an issue around coverage. So I think it's very important for us to look at expanding coverage of the occupational scheme. So how do we get more workers into the net and to encourage savings, whether that is through an auto-enrollment program where we have employers or then basically compelled to set up some retirement savings for their employees, and then also to look at our informal workers and see how we can introduce some sort of savings net for them as well. That aside, we still need to look at the broader savings, national savings for those individuals who do not belong to any workforce, who do need some sort of savings for retirement, because they are obviously reliant on the state. So definitely looking at expanding coverage, introducing, say, mandatory contributions. So where we have people contributing to the system, making sure that that's on a mandatory basis, looking at how we support the poorest of the poor and the elderly so that we can improve adequacy. And then just from a sustainability perspective, workforce participation, and then really continuing to strengthen governance and communication to build trust in the system. So I think education, financial literacy is a really key driver in terms of getting people to understand what retirement savings are all about. It's a journey. It's not just for this end point in time, but it's about building up and understanding what it is you need to do throughout your working lifetime to get to a point to have adequate savings. And I think that will then start improving our scoring. But I think the sort of national savings fund for those that have no access, as well as widening that net to bring more people into the system, would definitely improve our score.
Yeah, I get your point in that. And it is, I mean, it's the one of the stories of South Africa, the disparity between the rich and the poor, and how do we sort of balance that up? Do we leave it there? It's Belinda Sullivan, Head of Corporate Consulting Strategy, Alex Forbes. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Chantal Marks, F&B Wealth and Investments yesterday, talking around the We Buy Cars trading update. Sent that stock tumbling and it was down again yesterday. It's now some almost 20% off the highs. We asked if it offers value after the sell-off. Around 40% each said nope, still too expensive. Another 40-odd said don't like the sector. The rest said yes, better valuations. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobukle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, World Gold Council.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.